Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
Welcome to the Scott Radley Show for this Tuesday afternoon / evening. Glad you are along. Happy National Clean Up Your Room Day. Celebrate accordingly. If you're under 18, I'm sure you will not celebrate at all. However, who as a teenager cleaned up their room? I was not among that group. However, we do now. At least try to. You know, we should probably do a poll sometime asking people, are you a real, well, there's three options. Are you a non-bed maker? When you get out of bed, do you just leave it and I'll, you know, I'm just going to get back into it later on. Are you sort of a bed maker that I at least pull the blankets up? They don't look neat and tidy, but, you know, at least they're sort of in place. Or are you a make the bed, tuck in the sheets, align the throw pillows kind of person? There's three types of people. Which one are you here on National Clean Up Your Room Day? I would fall somewhere between 1 and 2. My wife would definitely be in number 3, which allows me to live in the 1 and 2 bracket. Anyway, glad you're here. I mean, if you're going to clean up your room right now, keep the radio on. We'd love to have you stay with us. Let me tell you what's coming up on the show today. We're going to be talking about what happened in Brantford yesterday. I don't know if you heard this story. It is unbelievable. I mentioned it yesterday on the show, sort of in passing. But an enormous slab of concrete, the width of all the lanes of the highway going one direction, fell onto the highway. We can throw around the word miraculous and, you know, I don't know how many people really think it means much. It was miraculous that nobody died or was injured in this. If you see the photo, the chance that a car could have been there or crashed into it or something, it's just, thank goodness it didn't. But we're going to be talking about our infrastructure here in the city. How do we make sure that our bridges, our buildings, our whatever, don't have giant slabs of concrete falling from them? And should we trust that that's the case? I mean, presumably those in Brantford trusted that that was the case, and here you go. Somebody, as I say, very, very easily could have died. Now, this might have been a provincial matter because it was on a highway, but nonetheless, we're going to talk about that one. How much faith should we have in the infrastructure that we have in the city when you use that as an example? Bottom of the hour, we are going to check into the world of UFOs, and I know this is not something that I generally talk about, but it turns out that the Canadian government and our military leaders have tapped into UFO experts, one in particular, asking for a briefing because of the volume of reports of UFOs that have been made in this country. Is this smart and covering all the bases on behalf of the military, or is this like cuckoo? We'll talk to the guy who was brought in for that briefing, the UFOologist or UFOlogist. I think it's UFOologist. Anyway, we'll ask him about whether or not he was surprised when the government said, we'd like to talk to you. I mean, I don't know that it's exactly the same thing, but I don't think our government has ever brought in someone to ask about a Sasquatch sighting. Or the, what's the other creature out in BC that they talk about? I can't remember the name of it now. But, I mean, those are not something that I don't think our government ever looks into. But UFOs, apparently they are taking this more seriously. But what do they exactly mean by UFO, too? That's another part of the equation here. It doesn't necessarily mean that our government thinks that ET is about to land in Manitoba. However, you know, maybe some among our government leaders and military leaders really do. Maybe they've been practicing on their Casio keyboards. So, you know, so they have the thing ready when the ship lands and Encounters of the Third Kind reference for those who don't know what that was. So you can go watch that movie later too. Anyway, and next hour, we're going to be chatting about something that if you ever go down the YouTube rabbit hole, you ever done this? I mean, you get onto YouTube and one thing leads to another, and pretty soon you're watching something you never had any intention of watching, but you're sort of wrapped up in it. We're going to talk about one of those things next hour. As always, the first segment of the Scott Radley Show is brought to you exclusively by Fox40Shop.com. For sport and for safety, it has to be Fox40Shop.com. Enter the promo code Radley at checkout, and you will get 25% off your order. We are going to take a break. We are going to recoup. We are going to gather our thoughts. And when we come back, we are going to try and find out how safe you should feel driving under underpasses and bridges in the city of Hamilton. We'll do that next. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Scott Radley Show here on 900 CHML. Thanks for being with us this evening. Yesterday, we talked about it on the show, and I sort of was halfway joking at the time that I don't want to drive under any bridges anymore, because did you see what happened in Brantford? And if you didn't, the story is this. In Brantford, under the Wayne Gretzky Parkway overpass on the Highway 403, a giant, and I mean a giant slab of concrete that is probably a foot high and 2 feet wide, so you can only imagine what this weighed, was bumped by something and came off the bridge. Now, it's really difficult to understand exactly. I'm looking at the picture here, and it's hard to see, but it appears that it was part of the bridge. Not one of the stories said that it was a concrete barrier that was on top of the bridge that fell over. It looks like it was part of the construction of the bridge. In other words, not supposed to fall to the ground. And yet somehow something bumped into this thing. And it's not the first time they say that something bumped into this bridge and knocked this whole thing loose. And not a piece of it, not a foot or two, not a little chunk that fell off, which you would sort of think, oh, you know what, if a piece of the bridge is going to fall, wherever that piece of construction equipment that was driving under there or doing whatever bumped it, a small piece is going to fall. This was the entire width of three lanes of traffic and then some. I mean, easily, if you had just slid it along a tiny little bit, you could have covered four lanes of traffic with this enormous slab of concrete that fell to the ground. It is unbelievable, really, that nobody was killed or injured or crashed into this or something. Thank goodness. I'm not sure here. I don't see in the story what time of day this happened. But if this had been in the middle of rush hour, no, I mean, it's not bumper to bumper rush hour like the 401 going into Toronto or the QEW coming through Ford Drive on the way home to Hamilton. But it's still, there's a lot of cars coming along the street. If this had been at rush hour, very good chance that this thing falls onto a car or someone crashes into it. So should we be confident, or how confident can we be, that in Hamilton, this could not happen, that we can feel confident driving under our bridges and stuff without worries about this? I want to bring in Ward 12 Councillor Lloyd Ferguson, who is not just a councillor and doesn't just sit on the Public Works Committee and a lot of other things, but is a man whose his first life, if we want to call it that, was in construction, which makes him perfect to talk about this kind of stuff. Councillor, thank you for your time today.
Glad to join you.
So I would assume that even though, and you're probably going to tell me that this is very unlikely ever to happen, I got to believe that for a city councillor, this is the kind of thing that if anything's going to give you nightmares in bed, it's a piece of something falling onto someone in the city. That this would be like the worst case scenario.
It is, but when it's struck by a heavy piece of equipment, as I understand it happened, bridges aren't designed to withstand that impact. And, every bridge is built with a very specific clearance between the top of pavement and the other side of the bridge. And when someone puts a load underneath it that's higher than that, there's going to be problems. It'll bring you to an abrupt stop.
That said, and I absolutely understand what you're saying. They're not designed, and maybe they should be, I don't know, but they're not designed for that kind of contact. But you probably saw the picture of this thing today. I mean, it brought down a massive chunk of the bridge, not just a little bit. This is, so let's bring this to Hamilton for a second. and not talking about someone necessarily hitting a bridge. Your level of confidence that our bridges, our infrastructure, our roads, our things, that they are safe and they're checked and that these kind of things would never happen just spontaneously.
No, it's hard to compare a bridge that's failing to a bridge that's hit. And the reason a chunk of concrete come down, I last saw the officer in the news last night where, and I built over 50 bridges a year in the latter part of my career when I was the head of Dufferin Construction. And there's 44 different types of bridges you can build. You can build a voided bridge, which is solid concrete with voids in the middle, because concrete only works under compression or tension. There's a bathtub beam, which is the steel beams you see. They look like a big bathtub, and the concrete decks poured over top. But this is the most common type of bridge. It's a beam bridge, a concrete beam bridge. And when something strikes it and shifts it off the bearings, there's bearings on both the pier and the abutment that this beam would sit on. And particularly if it hits it on a slight angle, so it turns it a bit, and then it can just fall off the bearings and fall right onto the pavement. And it looks like that's what happened. I had a similar experience when at Dufferin we were paving the 401 in the London area, and we had dump trucks that are hauling, or tractor-trailer dump trucks that were hauling asphalt from the plant to over to the paving train. And there's a flagman that backs them in and directs the driver to lift the box. And when the box is empty, he waves them off. And so he did that. And the operator left and proceeded up to gain speed. The lanes were closed, so there was no other traffic on it. But he forgot to put his box down, and nobody could stop him. And he drove it right into a bridge structure and brought down a beam, very similar to what happened yesterday. Although I understand it was probably a heavy piece of equipment that did it that has boom up too high. Not sure, but that's what I've seen and heard based on what happened. And bridges are just not designed for that. Now, the beams, the balance of beams will hold the deck up, but once you take down a beam, it just falls straight to the ground, and it's so fortunate it didn't fall on another car or other cars or vehicles got stopped before they ran into it because it lays right across the pavement. But, you know, every bridge is inspected on a regular basis. They bring out hydraulic booms that lift an inspector down, and you look for, you know, concrete spalling. You look for rust getting to the rebar. You look for, concrete cracking. And bridges are like everything else. They have a lifespan, and periodically they got to be replaced. But bridges are also designed with a safety factor of 2. So you design a bridge to take a load of a fully loaded transport sitting on that bridge deck and with 2 inches of ice on it. And whatever that weight is, you multiply it by 2, and that's what you're designed to. It has a safety factor of 2 on it. And so you won't see very often bridges collapsing under load. I think there's been some in Quebec, but they found some deficiencies in the construction where the rebar wasn't placed properly or the rebar had all rusted right out. You know, we saw another truck hit a bridge on the Skyway Bridge just a few years ago, and the operator, I assume accidentally, hit the lever that lifts the box, and he drove right into the overhead structural steel on the bridge in the Skyway, and brought him to an abrupt halt too, but did some damage to that structural steel that had to be either replaced or repaired before it could be reopened to traffic. But our bridges are safe, and it's found during it's every 4 years they have to be inspected, and if they're found to be unsafe, then we have to replace them.
We have heard innumerable times in the city about the $3.2 billion infrastructure deficit that we have. Is that part of this? Is our bridges in that? Because when we hear that, it sounds like, boy, we got a lot of really old stuff that needs to be replaced. Is our bridges part of that, or
is
that separate?
But because of the carry view, the public, they have to be inspected more vigorously. The bulk of the deficit is in our buildings that are deteriorating, particularly our sewers, because we still have some old brick egg sewers, which are built out of brick, that are sitting below the ground. And they're still functioning, but, you know, everything needs to be replaced over a period of time. And, you know, I'm not sure how we come up with that number of $3.4 billion. I think a lot of people would argue that our roads are rough and potholed and need to be resurfaced or replaced, and it's always money. But we won't put the public at risk, if, for example, driving across a bridge. But when a truck hits them, you can't do much about that.
It should, and last thing, I mean, this is, you said it. I mean, thank goodness nobody was there, but should these things be designed? And we're not probably building any bridges right now, but should they be designed to accept a blow from a vehicle, or is that just impossible?
Well, they'd be so heavy, you couldn't carry the load. You know, no, it's not practical. And how often do you hear about a truck that, you know, has a load on too high? Because the Highway Traffic Act is very clear about the distance between the underside of the structure and the top of the pavement underneath. It's right on the, every truck you see in the road tells you the height of the box that's on it. And if there's a location, if you go up, I think it's called, somewhere, I'm just drawing a blank. It's on Governor's Road, running north off of Sulphur Springs Road. There's a railway bridge that's been there for eons and is set on blocks of stone with steel beams across it. It's lower than the minimum distance that's required to be built nowadays. But boy, there's just a proliferation of signs warning truck drivers, warning low clearance. And most drivers, well, they have to know what the height of their load is so they don't go down that route. And so there is exceptions to that clearance, but it's very clearly signed, and they're very old structures, and they're generally railway bridges.
Ward 12 Councillor Lloyd Ferguson, I always appreciate the time. Thanks for taking a few minutes tonight.
Scott. Thanks. Bye.
Let us take a break here on The Scott Radley Show. Back right after this. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Scott Radley Show here on 900 CHML. It appears that our government and our military are starting to take the idea of UFOs more seriously. I'm not making this up. This is a thing now. Last week, CTV News reported it had documents showing top levels of the Canadian military had met with an expert for a briefing on this. Well, that expert's name is Chris Rutkowski. He's been described as Canada's leading UFOologist or UFOlogist. I'll get the proper pronunciation in a second. Chris Rutkowski joins us now. Chris, how are you tonight? Thanks for doing this.
Very well. Thank you for having me on.
Is it UFOologist or UFOlogist?
It's actually ufologist.
Ufologist. I had it wrong either way. Okay. So, I mean, did you ever honestly see the day coming when high-level military apparatus would call you up and want to chat with you about this?
No, I actually had never thought of that. It's very strange, in fact.
Because, look, I'm not being dismissive and I'm not being ridiculous, but it's probably no news to you to say that some people will chuckle at this and say, look, the military is clearly jumping the shark here and has lost their minds. If they're now investigating UFOs, they got other things to do. But has it, or is there something here that makes it not, to those who would be totally skeptical, and I always think of the X-Files when we talk this way, but for those who are really skeptical, is there something more to it than ET flying around and that idea of UFOs?
Yeah, in fact, we've gone way beyond that. The subject is being taken seriously. The Canadian government has had a history, actually, of taking UFO reports seriously for decades. In fact, up until 1995, the National Research Council and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police were both cooperating to gather information on UFOs that Canadians were seeing and to investigate some of the more interesting cases. And since then, Transport Canada and Nav Canada and a few other agencies have been actively soliciting reports from pilots of things that they had seen in the sky, and they're actually calling them UFOs. And, you know, when a pilot with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of flight hours says that he or she has seen something in the sky that's not there, and they check with air traffic control and there's nothing on radar, it's, you know, way beyond the realm of dismissing it out of hand. So there's no question that the reports themselves are very curious.
And, you know, you mentioned pilots, and I think it's important because, again, for those who don't necessarily follow this topic all the time, you think, oh, you know, who's the person who's saying that they were picked up by a UFO or saw a UFO? There are a lot of the ones that are saying they've seen something who are very intelligent, very reliable, very credible people. These are not yahoos or, you know, or wingnuts who are all doing this. These are people who are responsible and reliable.
Absolutely. These are people as sane as you or I, and I don't know how far that goes, but the point is that these are people, many of whom are good observers, and we also have to say that just because somebody sees a UFO doesn't automatically mean that we have to invoke little green men or anything like that. Most of the cases, in fact, do have fairly simple explanations. Some are misidentifications of conventional objects under unusual conditions. Quite a few of them just simply are insufficient information. We just simply don't have enough information to say exactly what it was, but we certainly don't have any proof that aliens are visiting us. And I think that's the point, that when we say that the Canadian government and the United States government and other governments around the world are keeping track of or recording and analyzing and doing some statistical analyses of UFO reports, that's all we're talking about. That, you know, people are seeing unusual things, and there's been an attempt to understand what it is that people are seeing. And in some cases, they turn out to be satellites and stars and planes and whatever, and more recently, drones and things like that. And of course, drones being seen over, classified installations is of concern. Objects that are flying into the flight paths of airliners is of concern. And so, you know, there's a safety aspect. There could be a security aspect to this. And I think those are the reasons why there is a reopened concern and a reopened committees and so forth to look into these things.
And again, your comment that, you know, many of these things, there is an explanation, again, I think is important, because it suggests, yes, they have said they saw something. And in fact, there was something. We could explain it, but again, it's not someone who just is coming up with something that is totally out of the blue that is not there. These are things that people have seen that are real.
Absolutely. And in some cases, these lead to other scientific discoveries. When the National Research Council was investigating reports of UFOs, they were looking for lights moving in the sky, like bright shooting stars or bright fireballs and things like that. And because they worked with the RCMP to get as many reports as possible, they were actually able to gather information on a bright fireball, a chunk of comet that entered the Earth's atmosphere, and were able to actually recover it on the ground because they had so many really good reports. So it's actually important scientifically to gather as many UFO reports and for people to report sightings of UFOs.
What do we make then, because there are some that we can, that are still the U, that we still have no idea what they are, and you've probably heard of ones that are, I mean, I saw a story just yesterday or the day before of what they say is now the clearest image from a pilot, I think it's from a pilot, of something that I have no idea what it was. What do we do with the ones that remain the U? Do we assume that there are things from other planets, or do we assume that there is an explanation, we just don't know what it is?
Yeah, I think it's better to err on the side of shrugging shoulders, that, you know, just because we don't have the explanation for something doesn't mean it can never be explained. But when you look at the data, and I've been coordinating the Canadian UFO survey in our country for decades now. In fact, over the past 30 years or so, we have more than 23,000 separate UFO reports from from Canadians. And even if, you know, 1% of all those are unexplained, you're still left with a couple hundred cases that are quite interesting, that may represent, you know, structured objects seen by good observers, that may be seen by multiple observers, and that don't seem to be explained very easily as stars, planes, planets, and so forth. So, you know, there are some interesting cases, and, you know, I would say we simply don't have enough information yet, despite the fact that we have 23,000 cases in Canada and 10 times that in the United States. That, you know, we need some really good data. We need instrumented data. We need, you know, observations by more pilots and radar operators and, field operators and so forth that really add to the understanding of what people are seeing. And if there is a foreign power that's flying planes or drones or something over North America, that has to be acted on. If there's a problem with the radar and the technology on board airliners that make pilots think that they're being chased by UFOs. If it's something that people are seeing in the sky that they can't identify and it's of concern to them, I would say that in all of those cases, it's something that should be taken seriously and is starting to be taken seriously by a number of organizations and institutions.
Right, and that would be then why the military would be interested in this, as you just say, if it's a foreign government or someone else doing something, that's where their interest would come from.
Right, and if it's none of those things, and my background's in astronomy, and I share the belief with most astronomers that there may be extraterrestrial life out there just traveling between the stars is something that we can't understand right now, but the possibility is never zero. So maybe, there might be some of that, but right now we simply can't say that. But what we can say is that there are UFO reports that aren't easily explained.
It's a fascinating topic. It really is. Chris Rutkowski, Canada's leading ufologist. Thank you for teaching me how to say that properly. I really appreciate the time today. Thanks for doing this.
You're welcome.
Quick break here on the Scott Radley Show. Back right after this. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
6:50 on a Tuesday evening. It's time for Matt's story of the day. Matt is in today. So we are going to give Matt three stories from around the world. Matt is back at the home office pressing buttons and pulling levers and whatever else has to be done. We're going to give Matt three stories, unusual stories from around the world. Matt will then ruminate upon them and decide which one he likes best as his story of the day. So, Matt, are you ready for this one? It's a big challenge. Ready. It's a huge responsibility.
Yeah, it's definitely the hardest part of the show, right?
Yeah, absolutely it is. So, yeah. Okay, let's start with this one. Now, almost always, as a policy, almost always, we avoid any story here that involves someone dying. Because, there's not a great deal of fun or laugh in someone dying. Well, there is always the exception to the rule, and story number one today has the exception to the rule, and here's why: because the person who died was not a sympathetic character at all, and this is called getting your absolute comeuppance. In Trenton, South Carolina, a guy strangled a woman, just a horrendous story, and decided in the middle of the night to go outside and bury her body. Couldn't have a more horrendous story. But Matt, here's why this story lands on Matt's story of the day today. Because sometimes, whether you want to call it karma or the fates or whatever else, rise up. Police found the killer's body the next morning because as he was frantically digging her grave in the middle of the night to bury her, he had a heart attack and died on the spot. There's something... What's the word I'm looking for here? Satisfying almost about, we don't have to wait for the trial. It was taken care of. You almost wish that every murder case went like this. I don't know. Is that too harsh to say? When we know when the person actually did it, yes. Anyway. Story number one, the guy who was burying the murder victim that he just murdered and he died himself of a heart attack because he was exerting himself so hard to try and cover his trail. Story number two, slightly less morbid, though very confusing. There are cultural differences around the world in how people do things. And, vive la différence, as they would say, although that's a terrible French accent. I love traveling. I love that people have different cultures. I love that they have different traditions. I love that they don't do things the way we do them. We don't do things the way they do them. That's what makes our world a rich place, that we have different ways. It doesn't mean one is wrong. It doesn't mean one is right. It's different. Well, we've had a couple stories recently of weddings in India where clearly weddings there are different. Not better, not worse, just different. And, touche for the difference, except this one went a little bit awry, apparently, in, I can't pronounce the region of India. They were two sisters who were getting married, Matt, the same day to two grooms. They decided to have both women married together. However, partway through the service, there was a power failure, the story says. This is from India Today. there was a power failure in the facility, the temple or the hall in the middle of the wedding, and it was sort of almost pitch black, but they plunge ahead with it because they wanted to have the wedding. Well, it turns out that once the lights went back on, the story says one of the sisters ended up married to the wrong groom, which I suppose means both of them got married to the wrong groom because they were two sisters who were looking to marry. Anyway, yes, they were asked to perform the ceremony again, but technically, legally, they were married thanks to a power failure. So there's that one. And story number three, and okay, so we've gone from the morbid to the, I'm not sure what to make of it, to this one. Matt, if you could have been born at any band's concert, your mom was at a concert and she goes into labor at the concert, what band would you have wanted to have been popped out at?
Well, I mean, if you want a smooth birth, maybe like a Steely Dan, maybe some like maybe some
but
mellow
your personal
stuff.
Favorite, your oh. personal choice. If you your favorite group, your mom would have had you wear in the middle of what concert?
Oh, geez, that's pretty tough. That's pretty tough to say. You are really putting me on the spot with this. I think the other stuff is less on the spot than my absolute favorite band. I'll just say, I guess. I mean, I think Steely Dan's up there. I'll just stick
Steely
with that
Dan,
answer.
Okay, and you know what? I'll go with that one because you're right. It would be kind of a smooth rock, you know, probably relaxing.
If Michael McDonald was there too, yeah.
yeah, there are people who do great Michael McDonald impressions. I'm not one of them. In Brazil, on May the 7th, a 39-week pregnant woman decided she was attending, because she had tickets and she was not going to miss it, she was attending a Metallica concert. And I don't know if it was the mosh pit or the sound or the volume or what, but in the middle of the concert, she went into full labor and they sort of carried her into the back room. But while the concert was going on, she gave birth to her child at a Metallica concert, which is just like the most rock and roll thing ever to do. That I mean, you know that baby's going to have some kind of Metallica name. You know that band is going to take on that like as a big thing, which I think is great. I think if you can, I was trying to think what band. I mean, the Beatles were long gone. You know, Rush would have been a lot of fun, but you know, I don't know. Metallica just seems like if you're going to do it big. Do it big in the rock and roll department, and you can't go much bigger than Metallica. So, Matt, will your story of the day today be the murderer who died of a heart attack trying to bury his victim, which was just comeuppance of the highest order? Will it be the bride and grooms who got married to the wrong bride and grooms because the power went out and nobody could see anything? Or will it be the child born at a Metallica concert?
I'm going to have to go with the Metallica one. I think let's go with some positivity here. Everything worked out in that one. That yes. was the only one where things actually worked out.
It's absolutely, you're absolutely right. The other two were, the first one was way darker than usual, but I love the idea that, you know, we don't have to go through all the trouble of a trial and everything else and going through the whole thing. It was, you know, the earth, the universe, whatever you want to say, God, it was taken care of. Thanks for coming out. See you later. All right, there's your story of the day. Hour number two of the Scott Radley Show coming up right after this. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
We are glad you're along. We know you have options. I mean, I'm not really supposed to remind you of what those options might be because heaven knows, you know, we want to make sure you stay here. But there are options tonight. There's a Bulldogs playoff game. There's a Leafs playoff game. The Jays are playing the Yankees. Raptors are out, so they don't have that. But anyway, we are glad you're here. We are thrilled you're here. We will try to make sure that even if you have the TV on with one of those things with the sound down, that you will say by the end of the hour, hey, you know what? I am really glad I stuck around because that was worth it. We will do our best here tonight. Let me give you your quiz question while we get into this. Your quiz question today. Now, this is something that you have, this is a word or a phrase or a whatever you call it that you have used in your life. Unquestionably, you have used this. I want to know if you know what it means. RSVP stands for what? What is RSVP short for? What is the words or the phrase that RSVP is short for? 905-645-3221 or *9900. RSVP. What is that? Matt is in. Matt will take your name and your guess. Matt will find out if you know when you say, please RSVP, if you know what you're saying. Because it is, it does stand for something. They didn't just pick four letters out of the blue just for fun. And it doesn't mean RSV, which isn't even something you can really say. And it tickles your lip when you say it. But no, it does mean that. It. What does RSVP stand for? 905-645-3221 or *9900. Those are the numbers. As I say, Matt will happily take your name and happily take your guess if you think you know the answer to that one. All right. So last night, among many other nights, this is not at first, I got onto YouTube because, you know, I'm lying in bed and YouTube is, you know, you grab your phone or your tablet or whatever and you click on a video that you think, oh, that's interesting. And then you've probably done this. And then there's another video off to the side and you go, oh, that's kind of interesting. I'll try that too. And then you're watching and then you see another video and you go, oh, that's interesting. Well, they're not always related. You know exactly what I'm talking about here, right? This is the definition of the rabbit hole. And pretty soon you've clicked onto a video that is fascinating, but entirely unconnected to anything you had started searching for once upon a time. And you have no idea how you got here. It's, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour is gone. And you have no idea what has gone on that you are now watching this, whatever this is. But, hey, you know, it's kind of interesting. I'm kind of watching this. And then I start watching a few more like this. Well, the thing that over the last number of weeks, and then again last night, that has caught my attention, and I, for the life of me, do not understand why. There doesn't seem to be a good explanation psychologically for why this is in any way interesting, and yet somehow it is. Are videos, and there's different names for them, but of people watching and listening to a song for the first time. Have you ever seen these? Have you ever done these? They have people who will sit there and their face will be on the screen and either a video of a band playing or just the album cover or something, and it'll be a very famous song usually. And these people claim that they've never heard this before, and they will listen and they will comment on it. And almost without exception, they are blown away by the wonderfulness of this amazing song that they never heard before. Why is this interesting? I haven't a clue. But maybe my first guest this hour will be able to help me because he knows everything about music. He knows everything about music. You can't spell Eric Alper without music. Well, you can, but you wouldn't want to. He is a publicist and a music commentator who joins us now. Eric, how are you tonight?
Good. You can't spell Eric Alper without using the letters RSVP. Actually, I think you probably can too.
Well, if you turn the A upside down, it almost looks like it.
Right, exactly. You don't like these videos, but actually, it's funny. I know.
Oh, I didn't say I don't like these videos.
This rabbit hole, though, because you start watching a music video, then 2 hours later, you're watching how a giraffe takes a bath while eating a cabbage. You know,
right.
I have no idea how that happens.
And I didn't say I didn't like these videos. I said I don't understand why I find these videos interesting because it makes no sense why something like this, why me watching you listen to music would be in any way interesting. Explain to me how that is, as you explained it. Like if I was to explain this as a TV show, as a pitch, I'm going to put Eric in front of a record player and he's going to play a record and I'm going to watch him and people are going to love it. We'd say you are on some sort of hallucinogenic and yet somehow it works.
Yes, because you know what's coming. And like that amazing Netflix series that you have gone one episode ahead of your partner, and you know what's coming down, you feel the joy and the excitement watching them freak out and get excited the very first time or second or 100th time that you saw them choose. And so there's something beautiful about discovering a song for the first time.
So is this essentially the same thing then, Eric, as watching your kids open a Christmas present and the joy they get from that?
And you know, let's not go so far because Santa Claus does really exist. But let's say that's exactly what it is. You're sharing in that moment because there's something amazing discovering a song for the first time, when you know that it deserves to be heard, meaning that when we're all kind of a certain age, we get into the Beatles and the Stones and the Who and Tragically Hip or R. Kells, and we know that they're popular and that other people like it too. So the same goes for all in entertainment, where you feel connected and joyful with that experience, watching somebody else going through that wholesome and uplifting things at the same time. It's bizarre and it's strange that you think that these people haven't gone their entire life without hearing Queen or Phil Collins or Led Zeppelin. But you have to remember that this is like a completely different world than some of these kids that are growing up in a completely different environment, you know, i.e., you know, white guys on rock and roll, steroids on your radio station. Sometimes they're going through life without even listening to the radio station once.
Yeah, and see, this is the other part about this. I'm not really buying a lot of this. There are some songs that you look and you go, you know, that seems like an authentic, genuine reaction. One of the ones that I saw, and again, like way down the rabbit hole, don't ask how I got here, were some guys and women who were watching Stayin' Alive, watching the video of the Bee Gees singing Stayin' Alive. And what's amazing is that beginning of that video, you don't see them. It's like the shark in Jaws. You don't see it for a while. All you hear is the music. And then all of a sudden you see these three very, very white men come walking around the corner. And
with medallions.
Well, yeah, and the response is, that's a guy singing? I thought the Bee Gees were women. And, you know, understandably, if you've never heard it before, and those reactions, yeah, I could believe. But a lot of them is like, wait, I don't care who you are. You're telling me you've gone through your life and you've never heard We Are the Champions, or you've never heard Back in Black at a sports arena or anywhere. Like, come on, some of these I'm having a hard time with. But
yeah,
whether that makes it different or not.
I think that some of those reactions are so over the top, and they're kind of meant to be, because they're growing up in a world where expression is everything. You know, being a mime is like first draft, what they should be doing, where they need to. If they're happy, they should be happy for, you know, the last person sitting in the last row of an arena should see their pearly white teeth. So I think that they are playing it up for the camera. They're playing it for likes. They're playing it for shares, and they're playing it for sponsorship and money that they get with every single view. So they know what the competition is doing. They're doing, you know, Queen and ABBA and losing their collective minds over watching ABBA's costume. So they have to go even further to try to stand out from the crowd. So it's a lot of copycatting that's out there, but it's also just designed to reel you in and get those collective hits. I agree. I don't think that very many of them are being really truthful that this is the first time that they're hearing it. Because how do they even know that this song is even worth doing as opposed to something else? I just want to see somebody sit stone-faced listening to Phil Collins through that drum roll for the first time and go, yeah, it's okay.
You know, well, that's the biggest, that song, Eric, that's the biggest giveaway of all, if it's not, because any one of them who does the air drum, you knew that was coming. You can't tell me then it was the first time, because you, but okay. So the other thing about this though, and this is really the psychological part that I find so interesting about this, is not, first of all, yeah, the fact that we could watch this and think it's interesting, and there are millions of them, and they're getting, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of hits. Like, it's not, you and I are not talking about something that only a handful of people are watching.
No,
this is massive.
Industry. This has the ability to move a song from off of the Billboard Hot 100 back into the top 25 on the sheer volume of people watching this alone.
So the other part about this that I don't understand is, when I watch, and I'm only speaking for myself, but I'm assuming this is probably the same reaction, my thought is, they better like this song. Like, they better think this song blows you. Why does it matter to me that someone else likes the music I like? What difference at all does that possibly make? I mean, I suppose it endorses that we like something good, I guess, but why should I care if someone else likes it? If I'm the only person in the world who loves a particular band, who cares?
Because everybody's listening experience is individual. The common the commonality of listening to music is community. Going to a concert creates that common ground between ages and strangers, all with a similar taste of music and support for what you already believe in. So you have justified your own happiness based on somebody else's rules and laws and expressions, making you feel like you're not an idiot, like you're not the only one that feels like this, therefore I feel left alone. There's something really deep-rooted about going to a concert in a town or in your own city where you didn't know anybody else, but then you somehow feel some sort of collective bond because you all agree on one thing, which is that this artist is amazing. In a world that is so decisive every single moment of our day, whether it's politics or sports, you know, we read the sports pages and somebody has to beat somebody else. We read politics, somebody is slamming somebody else. There's always the competition going on. And watching somebody enjoy something else is one of the very few things that we have in life that's a community experience.
Yeah, and you know, there's a flip side to this, I suppose, and that is that, you know, when the kids in high school who were part of the, at least back in the 80s and into the 90s, maybe it's still, who were the really cool kids were the ones who didn't like Phil Collins or any of the top bands. They liked the, you know, the indie weird music bands that no one else listened to. And there was a cachet involved with being the only person who knew this music. The weirder the music that you said you were a fan of, the better. And you almost wanted everyone else to hate your music because that made you unique. But now,
I'd be really mad when that band suddenly broke big, right? Because you discovered
they've sold out. They've sold out.
Yeah. You know, there's something about, you know, it's funny thinking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in the last week or so. There's something about this year that means more to me than any other year. It's because Duran Duran and Rick and Eminem and other artists got in. Those were my bands. Those were bands that I personally helped build their mansions in real time. So it's almost like if they were stock, I would have bought into it and I would have made them, you know, both of us being a success. So there was something about being more happier for them because they got in, because I kind of felt like, wow, I kind of picked right. And when we're watching these videos, we're kind of thinking like we're picking right too. Like we all love Queen. We pick them right. And there's something really cool about loving an artist. And, you know, although people don't really think of music like this, I get it. There's something really cool about knowing that the band that you helped, you know, survive and thrive, that they get to survive and thrive for another generation thanks to all these kids that are rediscovering them on YouTube. There's something amazing about the fact that Fleetwood Mac's Rumors is going to sell forever and ever and ever when we remember it the first time around.
Well, okay, speaking of the next generation, let me switch just tack a little bit here away from those watching other people listen to music videos. And by the way, if you still don't know what we're talking about, go look it up on YouTube tonight. You'll see what we're talking about. It's like, I don't even know what the phrase is, like listening for the first time or first time whatever. Yeah, you can find them. And just type in those words and you'll find something. And type in your song name. Guaranteed you'll find some. All right. Next generation, Mick Jagger. I don't know if you saw this story. You probably did. He was speaking on a Swedish radio station the other day, and they were asking Mick Jagger about the future of rock and roll. Did you see who he said was who the two guys were that he looks at as the future of keeping rock and roll alive?
Machine Gun Kelly and Youngblood.
Machine Gun Kelly and Youngblood, who, of course, are two people I know absolutely nothing about. I couldn't tell you something they sing. But the idea here is, as he says, that you need energy, and there's not been a lot of energy in rock music lately. All the energy has gone into hip-hop or rap or whatever else, and so these are the guys. Is Mick Jagger right, or is there more than just energy? Do you need to actually have some of those hit songs and a broad audience that will make this music stick around?
Yeah, you know, Dave Grohl said something similar a couple of months ago when he said that Billie Eilish reminds him a lot of Kurt Cobain in the spirit of giving the middle finger to authority, which is really hard when you're 21, but a multi-billionaire. but you wear the clothes that you want to wear. You make the music that you want to make. You've got the spirit of rock and roll in you, and that's, I think, what Mick Jagger talking about, the mixing of rap music and rock music to Mick Jagger, and that's what Machine Gun Kelly and Youngblood both do. To Mick Jagger, that's exactly like them growing up as 17-year-old snot-nosed kids mixing R&B and blues music and rock and country together to make their form of rock and roll that allowed them to make Satisfaction and Let's Spend the Night Together. So he's looking at these younger artists thinking like the spirit of angering your parents, of doing things outside the norm, is in them. The problem is that they are so massive, so quick, that the era of mystery has been lost. You didn't know what Jagger looked like until you saw him in the newspaper or magazine, and maybe that would have been 4 or 5 years after they started. We all know what these people look like. So it's more calculating, certainly. I think that there's just a loss of authenticity that's happening in this generation's worth of music, because, you know, the stakes are higher. The stakes are millions and millions and millions of dollars right from the get-go, rather than letting people form and blend and become the Mick Jagger that they become. The Stones weren't the Stones overnight. Machine Gun Kelly seemed to be Machine Gun Kelly within 2 months of us all hearing about him.
Well, and it's sort of ironic that Jagger mentions Machine Gun Kelly and a guy who has the word blood in his name, considering news we've been hearing lately about him and Megan Fox drinking each other's blood, which is just sort of weird and who knows. But all right, before we go, I got to ask you about this, because I mean, in my life, I have very much enjoyed U2. I have been to a number of U2 concerts. We've taken the kids to a U2 concert. It's been, you know, U2 is one of those bands that, you know, has been something that we've, you know, it's been on our playlist. And yet, again, maybe I'm just crotchety. Maybe I'm just cynical. We saw a video of Bono and The Edge in a bomb shelter in Ukraine this week, giving a performance for a bunch of people who are hiding out there. And I got thinking to myself, and again, maybe I'm just being too hard on him. I was thinking, is this cool, or is this a little too precious and a little too pretentious now that we're doing the bomb shelter tour for Bono?
No, I think it's cool. And the only reason why I think it's cool is that there seems to be very little movement when it comes to what's going on in Ukraine. When it comes to music, there are very few artists that are speaking out. And for some reason, nobody's quite sure why. I think either they just don't want
to. Russia's a big market. Yeah, Russia's a big market.
Well, yeah. But like, you know, Universal, Sony, Warner, Live Nation, and Spotify have all removed their companies from Russia. So it's not like that there's a lot of money to be made. I think they just don't want they'll just say, like, this isn't what we're about. And it's really good to know that, you know, during a crisis, whether it's in the economy or something happening in the world, that Bono and The Edge are there to put the spotlight on it. And I think it's okay. I understand that pretentious thing. It was like, you know, them busking in the streets of London during the G8. Like, come on. Like, you don't need to do that. But then if they were to do a stadium show, nobody would care. People would go, of course they do. That's the size of the band. So I think the fact that they can perform in a bomb shelter, something that nobody has done yet, go for it. You know, put the spotlight on what's going on and that horrible atrocity of things that's going on in the world.
Well, and you know, and again, arguing sort of both sides of the same coin, you know, back in World War II and the Vietnam War, you know, Bob Hope and others would go over and do their tours. Yeah. And that was considered totally a normal and acceptable and very appropriate thing to do. So, you know, it looks different now, but of course the world is different now. So why wouldn't somebody do this? And it's maybe it's just the fact that it's you too.
Yeah, it's your cynical attitude, man. It really is.
It probably is.
And I adore you, but that's the same reason why you don't like two kids listening to Phil Collins for the first time, and that you wouldn't understand why a giraffe is cute when taking a bath while eating a cabbage.
Well, okay, so you know what? The YouTube thing, when you're speaking of giraffes, a couple years ago, I was one of those people who got roped into this YouTube channel where there was a zoo in the States, and they said the baby giraffe is about to be born any second. And this got all kinds of play. And I was one of those idiots who had the thing up on my screen in my office. And it was days later. It was days later. I was totally hoodwinked by this giraffe thing. So I'm totally off giraffes right now. I am a giraffe-free zone.
You might be the only person I know that watches those Disney baby animal films and wants to wait for the coyote to come.
Like, no.
You know it's coming.
No, we're not in our house. We're not allowed. My wife and my daughter have put a full moratorium on any National Geographic shows that involve baby. Yeah, that baby animals are going to get captured by the lion. We are not permitted to watch that. And so, I'm okay.
Sometime this year, I want you to get somebody from National Geographic Canada and explain to me and the audience why they feel the need to show that to, you know, adorable 7-year-olds watching baby monkeys for the very first time in their lives, only to find out that they're going to get eaten by a hippopotamus sometime within the next hour. I don't need to know that.
Yes, well, you know, they say that the essence of drama is conflict, and it's either man versus man or man versus nature or man versus himself.
You just completely condense our entire conversation in one line.
Which is that the essence of conflict, you and I?
No, that's why we don't like watching people be happy on YouTube, because we thrive back conflict.
We thrive on unhappiness. Yes, well, you may be right. We only want unhappiness and fighting if we're going to have entertainment. I can only be entertained by the callous and the angry. We'll see. Eric Alper, always love having you on. Thanks for taking time today. Really appreciate this.
Thanks, man. We'll talk soon enough.
It's not actually true. I can enjoy things that are not angry and violent. I can. I truly can. Believe it or not, I truly can. And yes, we do indeed have in this house, and maybe you have one in yours too, we do indeed have not allowed to watch baby animals be plucked off the Serengeti by a bigger predator animal, which, you know, I don't mind that rule. I don't know that, you know, we need that. And it is in every single show, isn't it? And I got to go back, because was that always the case in Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom? Did Marlon Perkins always have the animal? I don't remember that there was always a need to have a baby animal be eaten by some other animal to make things interesting. I don't recall that was the case. Anyway, how we got from people watching music videos to baby animals being consumed on the plains of Africa, you know what? That's actually kind of exactly what happens on YouTube when you go down a rabbit hole. That's the perfect description of it right there. We did it only in an audio form. Anyway, let's take a break. We got lots coming up. Back after this. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Scott Radley Show here on 900 CHML. Here is a strange question for you. Who is the best fictional... 900 CHML. Scott Radley Show here on 900 CHML. Here is a strange question for you. Who is the best fictional singer of all time? That doesn't mean that you didn't actually sing, that you imagined it. I'm talking from a movie or TV show or something else. Who are the people who are the ones that you would say, you know what, they were awesome. If they were a real-life band, I would listen to them for sure, or a real-life singer. I'm going to count down the top 10 here. Someone made a list of these. I would not have thought of all these, honestly, but so good thing that someone else did. Number 10, if you've ever seen the movie Animal House, you will remember Otis Day and the Knights, who sound like this. You know you make me wanna shout. Kick my heels up and shout. Throw my hands up and shout. Throw my hands back and shout. Come on now, shout. Don't forget to say you will. Don't forget to say yeah. Say you will. Say it right now, baby. Say you will. Come on. Say you will. Say that yeah. Say you will. Say that you love me. Say that you Otis Day and the Knights from Animal House. That's a good start. I would listen to them. Number 9, I'm not sure I would listen to her, but she makes the list because of one song that she sang once upon a time, very briefly, that they tried to turn into a commercial jingle, but she adamantly stood against that because she's true to her music and she's not a sellout. It was from the show Friends. See if you recognize this song.
Smelly cat, what are they feeding you? Smelly cat, it's not your fault.
Phoebe Buffay, should she be on the list? I don't know. I don't know, but there you go. Number 9 on the list, best fictional singers. Number 8, now you probably won't know this song. Maybe you will. I don't know. You might not know the song, but when I tell you who the singer is, you'll probably be familiar with it. The song is coming up. The singer is Uncle Jesse Katsopoulos from Full House. I can live without Uncle Jesse, apparently. That one's not doing a whole lot for me, but there you go. Okay, Uncle Jesse, number 8. Number 7, you'll probably be more familiar with this one, no matter what era you're from. This is Keith Partridge of the Partridge Family. Sounds like this.
In the middle of a good dream, like all at once I wake up from something that keeps knocking at my brain. Before I go insane, I hold my pillow to my head and spring up in my bed, screaming out the words I dread. I think I love you. This morning I woke up with this feeling.
You know this one, don't you? Yep. That is Keith Partridge from the Partridge Family, David Cassidy, number 6. And this one, this is one of the movies, this comes from a movie that people love or they completely hate and don't get it at all. I was in the first category. First time I saw this, I thought this was maybe the worst movie ever created. It's kind of grown on me. I can watch this now and I can get something from it and I can kind of enjoy it. The movie was called Moulin Rouge. The singer, the fictional singer who finds her way onto the chart here, played by Nicole Kidman, Satine.
On the hand, oh, my continental, the diamonds are a girl's best friend. A kiss to the ground, but it's why the rental on your humble flats. Or help you feed your men grow cold.
Satine from Moulin Rouge, number 6. Number 5, a much more accessible movie than that one. Everybody has seen this because I think it's on TV 24 hours a day somewhere. It's always on. You flip the channels, this movie is always on somewhere. The movie was The Wedding Singer. The singer himself was a guy named Robbie Hart. Went like this.
If I get to know your name, if I could trace your private number, baby, all I know is that to me you look like you're lots of fun. Open up them loving arms, I want some, want some. I set my sights on girl, no one else will do.
I love it when you put the extra emphasis into it. Yeah, that is Adam Sandler as Robbie Hart from The Wedding Singer. Number 4, among, if not the most famous singers on television ever. Yes, more than Phoebe Buffay even. Number 4 on the list, best fictional singers of all time, this guy.
Yo quiero pedir que mi negra me quiera, que tenga dinero,
Ricardo from I Love Lucy. Best number four is the best fictional singer of all time. Number three, this guy would be my favorite. This is in my top three movies of all time. If I was stuck on a desert island, when they always ask, what movies would you take if you're on a desert island? I always thought that's a strange question because you likely would not have a DVD player or a way to get Netflix. Nonetheless, I get the idea. This would be in my list. This would be in my three if I was there. Number three, David St. Ubbins from Spinal Tap. David St. Ubbins from Spinal Tap, one of the great movies of all time. Just hilarious. If you don't know what it's about, it's a almost entirely improvised story of Britain's loudest rock band trying to make a return to touring long after the world had forgotten about them and all the things that happened to them. It is fantastic, especially the scene at Graceland by Elvis's grave. High-quality entertainment. Number two on the list, not surprisingly, when we're talking about best fictional singers, she makes the list, whether it's best real singers, best fictional singers, doesn't matter. She was a fantastic singer, left us way too young, whether you were a fan or not, just left us way too young. Number two, Whitney Houston as Rachel Maron or Maron in The Bodyguard. Rachel Maron in The Bodyguard, number two, and number one, the best fictional singer of all time. And really, there's two of them here, but we're only picking one. We're going to go with Jake from the Blues Brothers, number one on the list.
One, two, three, four. We're so glad to see so many of you lovely people here tonight. We would especially like to welcome all the representatives of Illinois' law enforcement community who have chosen to join us here in the Palace Hotel Ballroom at this time. We certainly hope you all enjoy the show. And remember, people, that no matter who you are and what you do to live, thrive, and survive, there are still some things that make us all the same. You, me, them.
There you go. Number one on the list. Best fictional singers of all time. Jake from Blues Brothers. Your quiz question this evening, and I'm guessing that some of you are going to know this one. However, let's see. RSVP is short for what? What does that mean? RSVP. 905-645-3221 or star 9900. Back with the answer after this.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Your quiz question this evening, RSVP is short for what phrase? Of course, it's from the French, répondez, s'il vous plaît. Matt, anybody know that tonight?
Yeah, and I do have to apologize. We had the same phone gremlins that we always have every time I'm here on a Tuesday. So I don't know what's up with that.
The Tuesday phones, all right.
Anyway, let's get to the list. Miriam, Russell, Angelo, Wayne, Frank, Hugh, Maria, Paul, Deborah, Doug, Ruth, and Zan. I'm sure there was others, but the phones just wouldn't behave.
All of you who didn't get through, we know you had the right answer. So, you know, pat yourself on the
back.
Literally
everybody who called in got it, so.
Yeah, read your own name out loud, and that's okay. Folks, thanks for being here. We'll be back tomorrow at 6. Hope you will be as well. We'd love to talk to you then. Have a great night.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.